Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Hullamore captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again. And Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is here!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. To good deflection! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park, twisting, shouting, shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MSC podcast. Tonight, myself and Buster are delighted to welcome along Tam Cowan. Tam, thanks for joining us.
No bother, pleasure.
Well, Tam, it's a week and a bit since the season finished up. Are you at the stage you're missing the football yet?
No, absolutely delighted. Thrilled to bits. A change is as good as a rest. And even to the point after what was quite a crappy season, that I'm even glad that we don't have any like World Cup or European Championships this summer. I could go with a complete break. Just 8 weeks of names thrust at us that Rangers aren't going to sign. That will... Normally that would annoy me, but it will seem like a pleasant change this summer. But as much as it wasn't a great season, now that we've actually survived, I look back, I've got a bit of the kind of S&M streak in me, to the point that I quite enjoyed the time Albion Rovers beat us, just because I knew it'd be a story to tell to the grandwains 50 years from now or whatever. But the same token, I think you need to take the rough with the smooth, and as much as seems farcical now for us to be out there playing a few short years ago a Champions League qualifier against Panathinaikos. When you've hit the heights and we were almost getting bored, if that's not too strong a word, of Europe, and when you're sat with guys in the pub trying to remember trips that you know and you're actually getting them mixed up, you're thinking, no, Dense wasn't in that year, that was after that one, and what was that place called in Iceland, you know? And you were almost getting blasé, so I think... as a Motherwell fan who's had a season ticket since 1979, I think it's good to take that off for the smooth, as long as we survived, of course. So the very fact that we did stay up, brilliant. And I like the wee bit of the nerve jangling stuff that goes with it. I mean, even at the point, I must be honest, the Hamilton game, I keep saying to folk, I'm 48 now, grey hair, had piles 2 years ago, really bad. I've got a varicose vein in my inside left leg, I've got family, and you sometimes think you're getting a bit old for the football, certainly a bit old to get excited about the football, you know. But the Hamilton Accies game at the Super Seal Stadium, or whatever they call it now, I'm fortunate that when we do the radio on a Saturday, I can ordinarily get out to the home game, certainly after our first show. I need to leave 10 minutes early to get back into Glasgow, that's fine, right? Hamilton Accies is within my radar as well, but with all the roadworks, obviously, that are the stuff of legend in this area for the past couple of years, I thought I'm not getting near that game because I would probably get there late and I would certainly have to leave very, very early. Whereas I could watch the full game coming into the BBC because it was been televised that night in Alapa, right? And that's what I did. And I kid you not, I sat in the studio, we normally do a radio show in, and it was just me. And I was trying to lure folk in, come along, watch Hamilton Accies against Mullow. They were no takers. But I was sat there myself, and honestly, it was about 10 minutes into the second half, and I started feeling physically sick, and I had to go out for a walk. Now, I'd like to think it was because, as normally happens on a Saturday, by that time I hadn't then eat or anything like that, and I maybe should have had something to calm my stomach, but I just felt an absolute bag of nerves, and I thought, wow, it's amazing that it still affects you, like, you know. I was panicking, I was thinking, what if we get down, what if we go bust, will the will we be able to get any fans back? My big worry was always the well boys who are in the corner, because as much as I think the guys would maybe thrive seeing a team that's winning every week in a lower league, there's the flip side of that is, wait a minute, these guys have only ever known top flight football. They might hate it. They might be doing a division and they might think, this is terrible. We're going to do something else on a Saturday, you know? So there was all these thoughts going through my head. So I was nearly bloody sick sat there watching the Hamilton game. But I came in just in time to get back in just to catch the winner and all the rest of it. And then it was just that lovely relief up here when we effectively clinched it in the midweek. And it was great. And to have done it even with a wee game to spare, which I never thought was going to happen, was great. And certainly when you look now as well, the potential financial problems that might face Dundee United with just a second season down there, the thought of what could have happened to Mullow down there is terrifying. So relief, but a poor season with barely a highlight.
See, in regards to your feelings during the Hamilton game.
Aye.
Now, during the 90s, when I was younger and really into the football, Hamilton were shite, basically.
Aye.
Third division and all that. That was the first time I really felt as if there was a bit of an edge to the game, you know, a derby feeling. Two teams had to battle for something.
Aye.
Did you get that feeling at all, or was it just something?
Aye, well, I don't know if it's just the circumstances. You need to look through the record books, but you're right. Everybody was saying this is the biggest Lanarkshire derby of all time, but I couldn't think another one that was really important in that respect, because in the past, you first and foremost, you think it now as being like the New Year game, as it's been for the past few seasons, and that's kind of what gives it the edge, and it's a game that fans look forward to. But I think a lot to do with that. I mean, no harm to them. If there's ever a town that's been hammered by fans, Foley and Rangers and Celtic, it's Hamilton. You know, we think Mullow's bad enough, but Hamilton's been murdered with that, and particularly when they had their nomadic years when they were a wee bit in the wilderness, and it was dead easy to pull supporters away when Rangers and Celtic were having their various times of triumph. But because of that as well, it's, you know, I'd be dying to see what it'd be like if Airdrie were back up in the top flight, just even the fans that they might bring. Because I'm always, you know, as I say, they aren't the Hamilton, but I'm always shaking my head when you look out at that big, big south stand that the Hamilton fans make look even bigger, just by having, you know, a smattering of supporters. Whereas the flip side, and we've not got the best support in the world going with that, but the fans that we've always taken in recent years to Hamilton has been astonishing. None more so than the recent game with that great stat that we had more fans at the game than Hamilton. I mean, that was terrific. So I would love, in terms of, I mean, the getting, if you like, the bigger, certainly the derby that always had the edge, I think. And in the old days, when you even get a wee bit of trouble in that, the games always was the one that you had your eyes in the back of your head leaving at the end of the game against Airdrie, you know. But I think that's some way off the way poor old Airdrie are just now.
I suppose we could be doing a season that's just right down the middle, neither good nor bad, because you look at the crowd that came out against Accies.
Aye.
The crowd that came out for the playoff games.
Aye.
The fans certainly rally when the chips are down. But last season, when I suppose Matt McGee managed to turn it round and we were safe, we were a bit to spare, but the games weren't important. The crowd's dip again.
I know it's a weird thing, but I don't know. I mean, as you find well know, in terms of, I've given up thinking or worrying about it, because when John Boyle was here, we, John, tried everything imaginable to get the crowds up here. Wasn't going to. He tried everything except just opening the gates for the first day of season and seeing how many fans come in. And I still got a feeling that at a club like Mullow, you're still going to get, roughly speaking, your hardcore and a few freeloaders, if it was nothing to get in there, a few folk who think, oh, it's only a fiver and I'll go up to that. Or the wee bit extra get generated that last midweek game when it was bring a friend for free. And of course, we were all taking the chance that night of losing a pal for life, you know. So these kind of schemes are always a wee bit dangerous. But I've kind of accepted the fact that we are where we are at Mullow, and that is why it would frighten me if we dropped in the league, because I think a big chunk of the fans would maybe even disappear.
And
we'd be left with your ultra hardcore, maybe, you know, I don't know, 2,500 tops.
I know that you mentioned Mullow a hell of a lot in the radio and your newspaper column. The summer months already, I'm at the stage where I'm making my return to Steelmen Online and checking up on a daily basis to see what we're signing. I know we've signed up Terence Lager for next season, but that seems to be the only activity so far. Is it the same for yourself? Are you kind of, do you scoop about looking for news? Or?
Well, you just kind of, I mean, obviously the big names that are bandied about the now, I was gutted when Scott McDonald intimated that he was leaving, he wasn't taking up the option another year. I just think he's always a good guy to have in your team. I thought there was a wee bit too much pressure put on him last season, and particularly with guys that didn't watch Motherwell every week. I was sick of even colleagues of mine at the BBC or in the newspaper who were just saying, oh, Motherwell have got Louis Moult and Scott McDonald, so they'll be fine. And you're like, no, it's not as simple as that, you know. And there was even in the back of the sponsors night we had down at the Alona Hotel, the sponsors player of the year, when I put up a prize, he'd taken a guy in the auction out for his dinner with his kids, and he'd pick a player, and he picked Scott McDonald. So we went back down to the Alona the week before last, and as I say, Scott was their chosen player, so we got a good kind of blather with him. But he admitted that he felt that pressure as well, because he reads the papers, he goes online, he listens to the radio, and he appears on the radio, and he kept hearing that, oh, you'll be fine, Scott McDonald and Louis Moult. And he knew it wasn't happening for him, because if you're part of your team like that, everybody would take a wee dip in a team when you're no winning, the confidence goes. And maybe even a good example of that, one of my favourites at Motherwell, when he's still only a boy, is Chris Cadden. But there's no doubt, when results started getting a wee bit shaky for us, that he kind of almost fell into the trap as well, and he wasn't the player that he had been the first half of the season, or certainly last year. So Scott was a big loss. I don't know what's going to happen with Louis Moult. It seems, to all intents and purposes, that he's going to go, and it's hard to imagine that we would keep him anyhow. And of course he has an asset and he's under contract, so care ching, try and get the money when you can. But then you suddenly think, who have we got up front? You know, it's one thing saying, right, as the financial model here goes, and it's the right thing to do and sell the players. Who have we actually got that's going to replace them? And then if you don't replace them properly, and we get a bad start to next season, then suddenly the panic bells are been the alarm bells have been sounded again, you know. So, but you're right. I mean, I'd been a wee bit. Just a few things that I'd had on between work and personally there, and I almost missed. I was late to just hearing about Lionel Ainsworth, and that was just because there's always things. I mean, everybody's got their favourite players and all the rest of it. I just always thought he was somebody that I liked, and somebody that I thought he should maybe get maybe a chance in the team, and somebody to do even think for next season was always worth a few goals and what have you. And suddenly, looking at the team, he'd be one of our most experienced players. So that was I was a wee bit disappointed when he left, but I can understand why. He's got a family and all that to support. They were obviously offering him Mayor Doe down at Plymouth. But so I'll be intrigued. I said at the end of the season there, when it officially finished, that the three starting lineups I'd like to see in the first day of next season were Celtic, Rangers and Motherwell. Celtic to see if they will buy two or three big players to have a crack at Europe. Rangers, because nobody knows what that team's going to be like. They've already got the fire sale on who they're going to bring in. And Motherwell, because A, they're my team, and B, I have no idea right now what our starting lineup is going to be like. So it'll be fascinating.
It's interesting you mentioned, obviously, we're losing McDonald, probably Moult as well. But the goals they scored, they basically made themselves. I don't think there was any help from the midfield whatsoever. I think that was a problem up until maybe Elliot Freer came in, because he came in and he set up about half of the goals that we scored for he came in. But I think the problem was in midfield, where there was no creativity.
Aye, I think you're right there. I don't think we're the sort of midfielders. I always see when Chris Cadden was at his best, I was wanting him to get steamed in there like a big strong ox, and for me that was his strength. Keith Lasley was never, you know, the creative type as well. And we did maybe lack that in the middle of the park. But the alarming thing for me, I believe it was, in fact, maybe the start remains, but I think it was, you might know better than me, until, was it just only a few weeks before the end of the season, that Marvin Johnson was still our third top goal scorer,
that's right.
And he left in August. I mean, that's a terrifying thought, you know. So we'll need to try and maybe strengthen that part of the team. But you're only hoping that maybe Stevie Robinson, having only effectively came just through the door late on there, you know, maybe contacts and connections that he's got. He might have a busy wee summer and pull a few rabbits out of the hat, but we can only hope.
Yeah, I think that's it. The kind of experience of Stephen Pearson last season, I think he got 10 or 11 goals and numerous assists as well. It just didn't work out this time. So,
no, again, that was a strange one for me. I don't know what happened there, but I think he'd be the first to admit. In fact, he did know as many words at the sponsors' night when I had a wee chat with him. He knew himself, he hadn't kicked a ball this time, you know. And, you know, it's a bit of a shame because with some of them, you're always looking for a wee bit. You know, a wee bit from him or that, but it didn't happen at all. It was anonymous. It was a bit like when we get Brian McClair back for the second time, if you remember that. It just never happened. He was one of my heroes in our first time. The only guy I'd seen in consecutive weeks, usually have been in nappies probably, but when he get two goals against Celtic and a hat trick against Rangers over the festive period, and it was unbelievable. And I was like an excited schoolboy when he came back under, must have been Big Butcher, but again, never kicked his arse, you know, it was a wee bit strange.
What's your take in guys coming back? There's been so many, and already the rumour mill starts with guys like Chris Humphrey, who was released at Hearts, and perhaps with Lionel leaving, that would be the obvious choice. Do you think it's a method that we need to stop going to, or is it got
us not necessarily, because I'll tell you, I mean, cards on the table, I was totally 110% up for Mark McGee coming back, and basically because I thought he'd a point to prove ever since the kind of slight bit of a cloud that he left under, and a lot of that was, you know, folk not getting their stories straight and all the rest of it. As far as MD was concerned, it was, well, before he left Mullo, he was touting himself for every job in the land, including the national job, and then, oh, he was ready to fly out to Lithuania with Vladimir Romanov and blah, 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 blah. And then that's why, you know, there was a lot of folks saying, oh, we don't want him back here. And when he did go to Aberdeen, the Aberdeen fans, of course, the minute he got that job, and he famously came out and said, well, it was my second choice to the Celtic job while he's being unveiled at the club. But I think, in a way, that's just Mark. And he'd be the first to tell you. I got to know him fairly well through events up here and that stuff at the club and everything. And he'd be the first to admit he was a wee bit like that. But the thing I can tell you now, it was a wee while ago, and it's almost an exclusive for your podcast, but if folk didn't like Mark, I'm hoping they'll no blame me, but when Ian Barraclough got his jotters after the game down at Morton on League Cup time, we did a great day as well that day. It was about 5 years. All the boys took the day off work. We went down to Paisley. I'd get a wee restaurant review done. We were full of the drink, and we thought, easy peasy, we'll go down and get a wee result against Green at Morton tonight in the cup. And oh, joy of joys, we can, even though it's kind of benches behind the goals, we can stun and watch again. It's funny how, maybe because I'm 48 now, but 10 minutes into that, you're like, fuck that, you're dying for a seat. And you end up sitting like one of the old Crabbit guys in the main stand, telling other folk in front of you to sit down. And then, of course, the result, and it was all horrible and that. But when Barraclough got jotted in the back of that, I remember, just for a laugh, I sent exactly the same text to Stuart McCall and Mark McGee saying, I hear Motherwell is lovely at this time of year, dot, dot, dot. And when both of them were up here, I was big fans of the two of them. I thought, honestly, I mean, you know how the way Mark transformed the team and indeed the club when he came first time round. Stuart McCall effectively did get us the Champions League qualifier tie. So I sent that wee text to him, you know. Stuart came back, you know, and he always begins every text with ha, H-A, meant ha, good one, I was like that. Mark always came back and said, fucking get me a tab, can you speak to him, can you, you know. And he was thinking I could just have walked into the boardroom or something and said, by the way, right, give the job to Mark. But I thought, well, for the guys that I did know were on the board that time, a couple of them had moved on, but I kind of grew up with them and stuff. I made sure I passed the message on. And I'm not claiming that he got it as a result of that, but I for one was delighted when he did, because I thought the first time round we'd had a terrible season the year before he arrived, and he transformed even physically some of the players. If you remember Big Jim Patterson,
Steve McGarry,
left back, big backside like mine, and he came out suddenly after the close season and the pre-season training, and he was half the man he used to be. And some of the football we played was magnificent. And then without getting mawkish, but all the plaudits that Mark McGee got at the time of the Phil O'Donnell tragedy were fully well deserved. So, I was well up for having him back. And to the point, I'm not going to be two-faced about it, I was also willing for him to be kept on when he get sacked, because my taking it simply was that he got us into the mess, gave him a chance to get us out of it, and I do think he would have. That's to take nothing away from Stephen Robinson. Absolutely delighted that he did, without any conjecture or speculation. It would have had to mention if we're talking about Mark, but I was a big fan of his, and I genuinely hope he gets another good gig, because I think the way it pans out, looking into the crystal ball, I don't fancy us against England really. I think we'll get beaten narrowly, and Mark's gone on record saying that's a must win. So if the pair of them get punted after that, and Mark effectively doesn't have a job, I hope he gets something half decent. But it'd be interesting, very interesting, particularly for all the Motherwell fans, to see where he ends up next, because you can't guess that. Would it be, you think, right, he's been doing like Championship level in England, so would that mean he could do another league down there, or two leagues down? Or if he was still Inverness in Scotland, maybe. Where, well, there you go, that's not a bad shout at all.
And
Inverness, good record with X Mullow guys that have taken on, Butcher and Malpass, who took them straight back up on year. But there you go. Don't know what the question was 13 minutes ago, but that was the answer.
Busted the League Cup draw tomorrow.
Is that tomorrow?
They only announced yesterday, I think it was, that it was actually going to be regionalised.
Yeah.
They just make up the rules as they go along with this one. But can I suppose get a few dates in the diary, don't it?
And in fairness, I think they got it right the last time. It was quite exciting. Yep. The way it was televised was pretty good. And we did get a chance to see some different teams up here. Kind of freshened it up a wee bit.
I enjoyed it as well. It was much, much more refreshing than watching some shite Championship team pod their youngsters out here.
And when did we last get a run of six games in a cup competition? that's a good thing with the group.
But a bit unlike yourself, to be fair, for the second day after the Inverness game, I was dying for the Fitbit to come back already. I'd already looked into it. The Confederates Cup, you mentioned international football. There is actually the Confederates Cup in Russia, that's kid on tour, they have before the World Cup next year, whatever it is. That's on in June as well, but as you say, the draw's the morning.
You've still got Scotland England next week as well.
That's a good point as well. I do pay £60 for a ticket for that.
that's maybe where we differ. I'm a wee bit old fashioned than that, and I'm when it comes to the fact, but I mean, I wouldn't necessarily even this Saturday night go my way to see the Champions League final. And I'm one of the guys who, as much as Motherwell fans like to have a wee pop at Celtic and Rangers and whatever, I genuinely always want teams like that, or Aberdeen, their Hearts, to progress in Europe, just so that they're the nights that you can go to the pub with your pals. Because when it gets down to whoever it might be, PSG against Lyon or that, I could not care less, you know. Whereas if there's even a wee tiny bit of Scottish interest, then magic, you think, right, I'll meet the boys in the pub, cut the drinks and a wee curry after the game. So even in the Champions League, I'm not caring, but I'm genuinely, I think we will all benefit from a break this summer after the season that we've just endured. It's no harm in it.
That's kind of something we've talked about over the course of the season as well with the guys in the back room. It was good to catch up with Flo, who said he was getting away for a break as well, because I don't think there's any.
He needs a break. He needs to roll up the fucking sleeping bag that he's got in here somewhere and get back to see his wife. He's only been married about a year, but I think he's seen her two after Lynn's. So he needs a break. He just needs to just take a wee back seat and realise that there are other things in life. But he won't get one, because it's, you could say that with the fact that as a new manager, effectively, that the work for Alan will start now. It'll be non-stop, and as you say, if that's the draw for that League Cup tomorrow, what will that be, June the 3rd?
June the 2nd,
right, then and the first games are July the 16th,
I'm not sure,
by which time as well there'll be teams I think already have played in Europe, you know, so there's no real break as such. But Alan Burrows could definitely, and I keep that, you know, I wouldn't claim to know Alan really well, but I've known him for years, ever since he first did anything formally as such at Motherwell, starting with the website stuff. But I sometimes can't believe when I do look on the Steel Men Online, you see him being really taken to task by folk and stuff that really you know, it's in some cases nothing to do with him. And I think a lot of folk as well, they need to remember, Alan wasn't a direct replacement for Leanne Dempster. They both even had a completely different job title. And as far as I'm concerned, a club like ours, you need somebody in there like Alan, 100%, who is a die-hard Motherwell fan. And that's what we've got, a guy who's only wanting the very, very best for the club. So I never quite understand the criticism of the guy.
Well, he's a face though, isn't he? I mean, there's five or six of them on the board. They probably couldn't tell you who the other four or five are.
Well, you're
because
right.
Because they know him and they know his face. And, you know,
you're right, absolutely. And I guarantee you, and if there are any fans listening to this who think, you know what, Tam's right, they should just contact you. There's always a wee bit of jealousy as well. There will be Motherwell fans out there who will see Alan Burrows doing this job, and the fact that the way he came through and on doing the message boards and all that, and now in this position at the club, and there'll be a wee tinge of jealousy for folk think, oh, I can do that job.
Absolutely.
And it's a very, very easy target as far as I'm concerned.
Tam, in terms of supporting the club, you've obviously supported Motherwell your days. How much has it changed from your career now in the media, where you're not able to go as much, and perhaps when you do go, you've got to be slightly more reserved?
No, if you hear me up there towards the end of the season, you're aware there's kids sitting about you, and you're roaring down to managers in the opposition dugout, and then you realise that they've been booked today or show the following Saturday. That's always a good laugh. And I've had tellings off even in the past for like Richard Gordon sat up in the radio gantry and saying that he can hear me down there, and jokingly saying, cut out at least the C word, Mr. Cowan, and, you know what I mean? So no, I'm as fervent a supporter as always have been. The only the pisser for me slightly is you know, just because I don't have a helicopter, I need to leave on a Saturday, or then I'll let the scoreboard get to 81 minutes normally, or as close to 81 minutes as that scoreboard can say, with the five bulbs that remain in it. I'm hoping that'll be fixed for next year. But so about 81 minutes, I sky out. The one and only thing out for all the bits and pieces that I do at the club, which is always a pleasure, when they take a bean out of them or anything like that, but the one thing that I did ask the club for when I passed my driving test, which was only 4 years ago, was to get a wee shot in the car park up at the top of the street there, and at the Old Fair Park School for a Saturday, because that at least means I can dart out from my seat in Road D in the Philadonnell and get up there in the car and down, and as long as you can do Nairbles Road and pray that they've not done anything weird or wonderful with the motorway into Glasgow, has been the case recently, I can get back in good time for doing our show at night. So, and the good thing about that is, to be honest with you, if I'm then going to be on the radio at night, and there's obviously other things happening and texts and emails coming in about all the other games, that wee 10 minutes of me leaving early allows me to catch up via the radio and all the other games, rather than me just transporting myself as if by magic for here into the studio and only knowing about the Motherwell game. So professionally, if you like, that's quite a kind of a good thing. But don't get me wrong, I'm one of these guys that if we're playing, let's say, Dundee United or Aberdeen, I am praying, and it's a Saturday, I'm praying for some sort of freak weather, or as happened last year with Aberdeen, floodlight failure, because I'm the only one immediately that is rubbing my hands with delight, because I think, oh, that's going to be a Tuesday night now, and that's going to be a Wednesday, and suddenly these places that are way beyond my reach on a Saturday I can go to, and it's great. And then even particularly because one bit of my job reviewing restaurants, I'm just like, oh, Dundee, I could go up there nice and early, get a wee bite to eat, or maybe go to the game, stay overnight, get a wee bit of lunch the next day. It's brilliant. So so that only goes to show you, to answer your question, that I genuinely miss when you kind of get to the away games, and that wee bit of camaraderie with your pals. That. But in saying that, I've been doing that probably longer now than I had been previous when I was able, because it's 22 years now I've been doing the radio, so that's 22 years my away trips have been curtailed, as opposed to the time before that when it was back going, and you know, even back to going in big Liz Mullins supporters bus and all the rest of it. But I do miss that, and I live for midweek games now, away games.
That didn't mean you made the 7-2 game, did it?
No, I didn't, because that was, I'm trying to think, I couldn't get up that night. What I did, no, I better not talk about that. But, I was going to say, my only involvement in that game was the chief executive of Aberdeen, Duncan Fraser, live on radio. I got him to fix two of our members of the Disabled Association who had to get overnight accommodation that night because it was a bit of a long trek and they'd missed out the first game because of the floodlights. And then the two people I'm talking about have since
departed.
Yes. So we'll leave that. But that's just one of the JFK things. That's the only thing I'll remember now about that game. Not even Mark McGee in the camera or anything like that, or Ryan Christie's cracking goal, but they two.
The working the club events, like you mentioned there, we've definitely encountered a variety of characters. Are there a few that stick in mind in terms of good or bad?
Stuart McCall in here, dancing on the tables, akin to that time he was dancing on the motor at Bradford, the great YouTube clip, and falling off and just doing something similar in here. I thought he was one of the best I've ever seen it in engaging with the fans at club events. He was great. That was just, and that was only here in the centenary suite. But I must say that by and large, apart from one year that it was also under Stuart's reign and he changed it, there was an event in here that the players were meant to come to and then get their trophies and awards and that, and then they were meant to engage with the fans there. And this one particularly, what happened, the players get their trophies or whatever, posed for a couple of photos, they all congregated at the bar there and then they all disappeared as quickly as they could today, whatever they were. And there was a few fans and you would spend good money sponsoring the players who were a wee bit miffed, because all in for them was maybe engaging with the fans that night and having a wee blather with them. And fair play to Stuart, I remember saying it myself about it, and he said, well, if I'm here next year that won't happen, and it didn't, and it was very good. And, but the way they do it now, I mean, it just the most recent one, doing that, the Alona, which was now that, I mean, the girls in here are in charge of that stuff, Susie and Bernadette, are absolutely brilliant, and they put on a fabulous night down there. All the fans that were there had a player at their table and they sat there for the whole night. And the great tip bit for that, that when I arrived that night, I came out for the straight out for the BBC into the Alona down the Strathclyde Park, and just to get a heads up about running order and all that, they were all started eating their dinner. I said, just get everybody started with me and I'll pick up when I arrive. I said to Susie and Bernadette, I says, I'll see you when I come in. I sat down at their table, and Stevie Robinson and his good lady, Tracy, lovely woman, she was there. And the great thing was, because that was the day we played Inverness, we're 2-0 up, I think we're coasting, and we went to 2-2 each. And the first thing I was thinking, because I was emceeing that night, is, oh shit, we've got this, what's this going to be like tonight? The players' sponsors night, it's going to be like a morgue, it's, you know, it's going to be dreadful, what a horrible atmosphere, you know. And obviously we won 4-2, yee-haw, great. And Stevie Robinson said, which I thought was quite eye-opening, he said that when the players ran out that day, at 3:03, he said the last thing he said to them as they left the dressing room was, remember, they're going to a supporters' function tonight, and you're all going to be sitting individually at a table with fans. It's up to you how you want your night to be. And I thought, wow, that was amazing. I thought, I wish a manager would do that every week, even lie to them, just say, right, boys, mind, we've got that, supporters do the one support, hi, we've got a supporters do it, and they could go every week, we could win the league every year, it'd be brilliant. But so that kind of thing, I think, I must be honest, because I don't pal about with any of the players, or there's a couple that you know better than most, because they've been here so long, like Keith or whoever, but from what I can even see and observing these things, and as a fan, diehard fan first and foremost, who wants to see the fans are being dealt with properly with the players, I must say, I think the Motherwell players do it well, because there's other clubs that I hear about for other fans, bigger clubs, who supporters clubs at those teams, they sometimes get a wee bit sick of having functions where the club will send along some players and it's like three guys with under 17s. And you know, and I've heard a lot of fans saying that at bigger clubs, and they get a wee bit sickened with that for all the money they put in to their team. So no, I think the Motherwell players, by and large, have done that side of engaging with the fans very well.
Talking 20 odd years off the ball, it's pretty much a staple diet of the Scottish game now. something that I've continued to enjoy over the years. I'm sure you're the same. How much enjoyment do you get out of that? Because it seems to be something that you...
Oh, it's great, because all the stuff that I've done, whenever you get asked, I've been asked in the past quite a standard question about what have I preferred doing, the newspapers, telly, radio. And I normally say radio because it's so instant. I mean, I live 5 minutes away from where the BBC is now, Pacific Quay, down near the Hydro. And, you know, the bottom line is, even if I slept in a Saturday morning, I could get up, still in my jammies, jump in the motor, get into BBC with 5 minutes to spare and still effectively do a show. As long as you've been a crosser, and it's been happening that way, you know. And you couldn't, you know, if you woke up and you had 5 minutes to spare before a deadline with a newspaper, oh, you're gubbed, there goes that column or whatever. The telly with anything like that, aye, Alan, you alright? The anything with the telly for all the years I did that as well. There's so much planning goes into it, and then even rehearsals and makeup and change of clay. You know, a lot of it's just bloody time consuming that. But the radio is just instant, and even to the point that you know, things can happen on the day when you're doing a live show. They can take the show in a different direction. And so I've always enjoyed that, and to the point that I never, ever, ever, not once have I, when a day come over here, finish at 2 o'clock on a Saturday, I can bin my seat by the time I've parked and whatnot, sit with my pals there comfortably for about 2:45, but not once would I come in after the radio and go and sit with my pals and say, oh, I've just come from my work. Because my mates who knock their pan in somewhere through the week here in the Civic Centre and that, they would quite rightly book my boys, you know. And I never, I always say I'm going into the radio, or what are you doing? Say, oh, I'm in the radio. I never, just a thing with me, I never say I'm at my work. You know, work just sounds, work's out bloody digging the roads, I've been up in the roof in the pissing rain and fixing tiles and that. Get in and having a laugh with your pal, meeting folk that you might never have got a chance to meet before, having a laugh and a joke and a carry on with them, and just talking shite about the fit, but it's brilliant. And then they pay you for it as well. They must be off their heads.
You think, I know, it's the amount of change in Scottish football, whether it be broadcasters or changes in technology and everything else, this is one of the few things that has actually been pretty much a mainstay over a sustained
period.
And I think
it's because, again, you kind of move with the times of life. Two things with that. For a start, we know, we effectively, I can't remember the last time we took a phone call. There'd be still folk would say, or maybe I've seen in articles about the football phone and off the ball, but we've never taken a phone call for ages. And basically that was something that kind of me and Stuart, almost in the sly, we introduced, if you like, because there was nothing I hate more than when you do hear football phone-ins, and it's a guy that phones in, and it's just also so kind of slow and stuttery and out. And get, hello, is that me now? Who am I? Is that you? No, it's Stuart, you know, all that, and it makes me cringe, you know. Whereas if I, it's normally me that's put in charge of things, if I police the thankfully mountains of texts and emails that we get in, you know, you get into the habit, and it's almost like OCD I've got with it now, but you do get into the habit of just policing that, and it can be things that are short and snappy, rather than all that folk phoning in and it sounded quite messy. So we've changed that aspect, if you like. And again, even that allows you know, in terms of technology, you've moved on a wee bit, because texts and emails, in the 22 years that we've done the show, originally any feedback that would have been letter, a good old-fashioned letter, when we actually started out, you know, in 1995. So we've seen a change in that respect. And then, of course, the very thing that we're doing just now, they always have a podcast for the show as well. So, but, you know, ostensibly at the heart of things, it's still like an old-fashioned radio show. And to be honest with you, the best thing I take out of it is when, and I don't mean this in the slightest way sexist or anything like that, but when women say to me, and it's a common thing, they say, oh, how are you doing, Tam? I don't like the football, but I do like listening to your show. And I just take that as a compliment, because the one thing I know what they mean by that, because the one thing that you'll know here in any show that I've got any part of is I'm sitting there chuntering on about, you know, 442s and the high press and up top. I think that phrase is actually barred on our show. All that pish, we leave that to the folk who get a kick out of it, but we certainly don't. So, you know, if it was a story that, you know, there's an option. I was talking about two things in the show. One of them was that Gordon Strachan had devised a brand new tactical formation that he was going to try against England, or the other story was that the club secretary Montrose get caught we swan down the wife of the assistant manager's bra at the Christmas party. I know what story we would always focus on a Saturday. It's as simple as that.
I know we're talking about the break and the fact that we didn't want to look ahead to next season, but unfortunately that's kind of next in the agenda. You talked about potential signings. It's going to be a summer of a major overhaul. Is your hope, like you talked about Chris Cadden and how much you enjoyed him kind of coming through the ranks, and there's a few young boys have had the chance, Shea Gordon, yeah, Adam Livingston. Is that the way that you hope the club goes? Is that the way you like to see it when the youngsters are coming
as long
through?
As we stay up. I'm not going to lie, I'm all for giving the kids a chance and all the rest of it, right? But there's an old pal of mine that I met through Stuart Cosgrove, Shug Taylor, who used to get a hard time. He's a diehard St Johnston man as well, but he was famous for any of the young boys at St Johnston that he didn't think were having a good game, he would absolutely lacerate them. He was one of these guys that loved shouting at. And his phrase was, they're taking a man's wage, let them do a man's job. And I must admit there's a wee bit of an outlook in that. If the clubs want to say, oh, look at us, clubs in general, we're playing young kids and we're giving kids a chance, and they're like, aye, okay. But we're not seeing any reduction in the turnstile prices. It's not that you're charging under 17 or under 19 admission charges. So, you know, stop trying to kid us on a wee bit with that. So, as much as it's great seeing young kids coming through, particularly in the era in which we now live, and everybody's aware of every penny being a prisoner at every club. When you mentioned Chris Cadden, I'm a realist enough to say that as much as I think he's a top man at Motherwell, and I'd love to see him here next season, I do know that he's got a few years yet to go in his contract, which adds a couple of pound signs hopefully. And if I heard tomorrow that somebody down in England had come in and snapped him up for £6 million, they'd be maybe happier than me, you know, because that's the way we've got to look at it now. But the guys that come, I mean, the wee guy Alan Campbell, I was impressed with him, and I'm saying that as a guy that I was talking the other week on the radio, that when it comes to Scotland, we're the best one in the world. The under 17s or the under 18s, under 19s, I don't care with Scotland. Good luck to the boys coming through, and I hope they make the grade and they play with the big team. It's not the big team I look at, and I must admit there's a wee bit of that with me at my level, and I also treat it as a pleasant surprise if suddenly a couple of young guys up here who've been doing well down the ranks and they get a crack at the first team. That'll do for me. But as I say, ultimately, as long as the guys that we do give a chance to, if they're good enough, and it's constantly always about survival, if they're good enough to keep us up, rack up a few points, then I'm happy.
It's possibly fair to say, even though we're going through a summer of transition, you look at Dundee with their new manager, there'll be guys come and go at Aki's,
yep,
there'll be a few teams in that cluster, Kelly the same, Lee McCulloch getting the job there, that will be there or thereabouts. So it's a very competitive league, isn't it?
Okay, that's the thing. And I would make it even more competitive. I've argued for a while now. It seems that the vast majority of Scottish football fans want a bigger top league. And then the minute you hear folks saying, oh, but you'll end up going back to the old days when you had games that weren't competitive at the end of the season. I say, no. The playoffs have been, I think, a brilliant, brilliant success. They have generated so much excitement, and I think what you do is expand them. Instead of having it where effectively the bottom two teams, as things stand, one goes down, one goes into the playoff, then you take it up to the teams that are the kind of third bottom, fourth bottom, fifth bottom, and you allow for the top 16. And that means that as you get towards the end of the season, you're not getting this no man's land in the middle, where teams, if they happen to be playing each other, they end up, it's an absolute dead rubber and you can't get any fans and there's no excitement.
You get folk going on their holidays in April, basically.
Exactly. Just expand the playoffs. I think it's a dead simple answer. And it's been shown in recent years when you see, last season was a good case in point, with the best will in the world, how many supporters of top flight teams, if they've been drawn in the cup against Hibs, Dundee United, Falkirk, Morton, even Queen of the South, you wouldn't have put your mortgage on your team. You'd have thought, oof, that's a tricky one, I can see us coming unstuck today. So there clearly is some decent teams out there, and let's be honest as well, I think I'm right in saying that Falkirk enjoyed bigger home crowds than Motherwell last season, an average of, I think, about a couple of hundred. They were getting quite regular, they were nudging into the 5,000s when we were still teetering about 3,900 or 4,300. Seemed to always be similar attendances we got. But so we're on the mix here again next season, but by the nature of the beast, I think for all the top Brendan Rodgers, the invincible season, that will never happen again. Not until next season, Brendan. I'd like to know what the betting is. In fact, I must explore that just for him to do the same again and go unbeaten, because I wouldn't mind a few quid on it. But if you take them out of the equation, everybody, of course, and if it didn't happen, it would be something amiss, because for the Rangers fans to pack out Ibrox every other week and the money that generates, surely to goodness, they must be able to cobble together some sort of team to put a bigger challenge in against Celtic, or certainly even a bigger challenge against Aberdeen. But I still think you look at St Johnston, St Johnston fans will tell you that Motherwell is a bigger club than St Johnston. Of course it is, and it should be. But we should be, ideally looking at and up there again, and it'd be great to get a wee trip into Europe again. We all really enjoyed that when it happened, but if we're in with the mix, great. And again, it always goes back to as long as we stay up.
And the gaffer, I know Mark McGee, as soon as the chips were down, perhaps due to the way he'd left the last time, the crowd maybe turned on him a bit more than a manager.
Aye. Although I think, to be fair, I think Mark will tell you that he turned against the crowd quite a bit as well. There's a few wee things. I've said for years, in fact, because we sit just above the dugouts, I've always argued they're the best seats now. It's because if the game's pish, there's always a chance where you might get a wee bit of pantomime down between the dugouts and fourth official. And, I've enjoyed that for a long, long time. The best one being the guy who always took the bait in the away dugout was the boy, was it Mark Venus, who was number two, I think, Mowbray. He was great, because he would always answer back and he'd be agitated, and it'd be great if the game was rotten, you'd enjoy that, but for the kind of, there's a couple of the old Statler and Waldorf characters that sat in our row who moan about anything, right? And increasingly I was seeing Mark answer them back, and one time in particular where it was a really big, loud, he swung round. His big jowl was all swinging and that, and he just swung around and looked up and, "Fuck off!" And he just, and at that point there was a guy starts feeling next to us who was going to, "Right, that's not good enough for kids, I'm going to see a steward," and I said, "Mate, calm down, right, calm down, you're like the fat man, and Marvel." It's not like folk could complain because Darry and McKinnon gave them their finger, all these guys with Forswood and all that, and that's perfect.
The same ones that were trying to climb over the wall to get to him when he's getting shy.
They were aghast. Like, he gave me the finger, But so all that stuff, I quite enjoy all that, but I found that, I thought increasingly, of course, what happened with Mark up at Petondre and the guy sitting fumbling him and all the rest of it, But again, none of us know what must that be like when you're effectively in charge of the team. You're the figurehead, you're the guy that gets the flak when it goes wrong, and when it really goes wrong, 7-2 at Aberdeen, 5-1 at half time at home against Dundee, I think we would all lose them.
Especially again, I was sort of on the heat side as well a wee bit, but when you get sitting in the stand, people calling you an arsehole and all that.
I know, but again, that as well, imagine what it was feeling like then, we're getting humped up at Aberdeen, and then there's guys shouting, "Ah, you're a clown, McGee," and then the big camera right in his face, it'd been interesting to see. I did genuinely think the first time I saw that, when it famously cuts off at the get that to fa. I genuinely thought when I watched it, I thought, he's lamped him or something. That's the only reason this is cut out, he's gone for the guy. That's the one thing I would advocate, now that I mentioned it. If anybody's still looking at their season ticket and they're looking for the best seat in the house, it's definitely just the ones just above the dugouts when you get the best of everything.
That's a tricky one, isn't it? Because that's the sort of scenario that would have been discussed in the radio over the 4-4-2 and the 4-5-1.
Oh, absolutely, in fact, we spoke about that last week, because Falkirk had what I thought was a great competition when their last playoff game, when they were beaten by Dundee United. and they had a competition in association with one of their sponsors, just called the best seat in the house. And what they did, they put on a big kind of comfy sofa. So the same thing, Aunt Deck down there Saturday night, right, taking
did they,
a
did
show.
Did they not do a hot tub at one stage last
season? Well, they did that last year. They had one, the hot tub down there, it was a corner flag or something. But no, this one was at the halfway line, above the dugouts. Great view, and they also had a wee bit of waiter service with, sadly, no alcohol, because they wouldn't have been allowed that, but with soft drinks and sweeties and pies and all the rest of it. And it was great, so we got to talk to them about that. The feedback we got was terrific. I strongly advocate Row D in the Phil O'Donnell stand. It's well worth the price of your season ticket.
Tom, thanks very much for your time tonight. It's been much appreciated. Hopefully the background noise isn't too severe for folk listening back, but it should be alright. I'm joking. Buster, thank you very much, mate.
No bother, mate.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back in the next couple of weeks. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
You said the brains I had.